Hey, producers podcast time. Though this is not the producers podcast that you would be used to if you're finding this via my site or my RSS feed. If you're finding it via the TM Studios site, maybe other places out there on the web, 360 Country, etc., this is what you're looking for. And feel free to go check out the rest of my podcast. I may as well give myself a plug. RyanOnTheRadio.com is where you can find that entire podcast. But you should know right out of the gate, if you're used to my podcast and you like the one-on-one or group interviews with radio imaging or voiceover talent, this is not that. This is a podcast or an episode dedicated, it's actually a conference call. I brought RJ Curtis from All Access, the country editor of All Access, on. He has, sorry, RJ, but you in your fourth decade of radio and venturing near the fifth, I guess. I think he started in the 80s. Anyway, tons of experience in country radio, but he's done it from the label side, the radio side, now the All Access side, even worked at Country Air Check for a little while. I'll talk about RJ once we get into the interview. Just be aware, this is not the typical producer's podcast interview. And if you decide to delete this file right now because you weren't looking for this, totally understand. But you might have found this episode and you never knew that I existed before, and you want to check out my other interviews, again, please do so, RyanOnTheRadio.com. There's definitely some other country-related episodes to check out. For example, one I will highlight is John Willard, one of the preeminent voices of all of American country radio, one of my favorite interviews that I've done, and just a heck of a good guy. Also, Brian Lee, the voice of WYCD and other major, well, he's the voice of everything, but as far as country radio goes, he's the voice of some major country station. Buzzin', for example. Speaking of YCD, we did, at the end of this, bring Texas Terry Phillips back onto the show, and he discussed the battle situation going on in Detroit. But anyway, this episode revolves around competitive scenarios in country radio markets because country is the largest format in America. I brought on experts. We talked about some of the strategies you can use. You'll hear all about it. You'll hear all about what we're going to talk about here in a minute. So continue listening if that interests you. If not, I'll see you next time. Thank you for being here. This is something we're trying to do quarterly, and I'm going to try and make these, you know, as valuable as possible for the great clientele of the 360 Country. And also, I will put this out as a podcast when we're done. I'll do it on my own podcast, which a lot of people are familiar with, but I'll also make the audio independently available on the 360 Country website. I'll give it to RJ. If they want to put it over at All Access somehow, I will put it on the TM Studios website. There'll be links on the Facebook, the Twitter, the Instagram, the Snapchat. Actually, we don't have a Snapchat, but anyway. So there you have it. So if everybody is ready to go, RJ Curtis, country editor at All Access, I will finally say thank you so much for joining us, RJ.
Pleasure to be here. Good to be here.
All right. So the goal here today is to basically do a call and discuss the country radio battle scenarios, the direct competition that we face in country radio programming, because as the country radio format is now, if not for the last little while, has it been maybe a year, it's been the largest format in America. New stations are popping up all the time. Big heritage stations are getting competition from, you know, one, two, and sometimes three other competitors in the market. Oftentimes you'll have a group that will actually position multiple country stations against another. So there's a lot to discuss in this realm. So RJ, before we dive into the real specifics of how to program and how to, you know, image and brand against, whether it be a new station or maybe you're the new station, first give us a quick 60-second background of, because I know you have been around the block, you've been, you know, neck deep in the country world for a long time. Give us a little background on where you've been and what you've done.
Yeah, sure. I'll just start working backwards here. I've been with All Access for the past 14 months. Prior to that, I was with Country Air Check for 2.5 years. What brought me to Nashville was doing a promotion on the Arista Nashville team. I worked the Midwest for about 1.5 years. Prior to that, I was with Radio and Records for 3 years up until they ceased publication of R&R in June of 2009. And so for the last eight years or so, I've been really in the trade publication world, writing about the format, And, you know, with the exception of my cup of coffee in promotion. But prior to that, it was 30 years in radio. Yeah. My last 7 years in radio were in Los Angeles at KZLA, where I was the OM there. Before that, I was in San Antonio programming. I was the OM of the cluster, but programming KCYY and KKYX AM. Before I moved to San Antonio, I did 1 year of syndication as the OM for After Midnight. And this is before Blair and Rod West sold After Midnight to Clear Channel. After Midnight, I was with KZLA. My second stint there from 1993 to 1996. Prior to that, KNIX for 6 years. I programmed there and did mornings and afternoons for 6 years. And from 1980 to 1987, when I joined KNIX, I was at KZLA. So that's going to a common theme in my radio career is three stints at KZLA over the period of a total of 17 years. And that's kind of the thumbnail.
Yeah.
Hope it took... probably took more than 60 seconds. Sorry about that.
That's okay. No, I mean, honestly, if I was doing an interview with you, we'd spend a lot more time because you have so many stories to talk about. You know, so if we were just doing the RJ Curtis show, well, then there'd be plenty of that. But
it'd be pretty boring. So let's talk about the format.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the format. Let's talk about the competitive situations we find ourselves in. I sort of wrote out bullet points. I don't like to write out full questions, but I write out bullet points. But the first one I started with is that big picture, top of the heap question, and then we'll work ourselves down and into more specifics. And I'll even bring up some real life situations that are going on in some of the bigger and medium sized markets out there. But anyway, if we find ourselves in like a sudden situation where a direct, potentially strong country competitor appears in our market, what is the first thing we should do? And, you know, this is a general answer, as you can talk from your OM seat, from a PD seat, even from a production and branding seat. But the competitor arises. What is the first thing we should do as a station?
Well, you know, I think that most PDs on the call or listening would agree that prior to that ever happening, you have to spend a lot of time attacking yourself so that when it does happen, and if you're in a market that has a good country life group and you have great shares, you have to go into it assuming that someone is going to come in and try and compete with you. And so the process is ongoing where you're attacking yourself all the time. And if you are effectively doing that, then once the other guys go on the air, you're kind of prepared. You've either... you've done a good job of prepping for any weak station might have and eliminating that. And in the onset of the attack, when the guys come on the air, I think, personally, I think you just have to just stay calm. Don't do anything rash. Don't react. Remembering that, and I'm going back to some very basic programming fundamentals that I learned a long time ago, but when these guys first go on there, they don't have any listeners. So if you're just knee-jerk reacting to any moves they make, I think it's the wrong thing to do. You're the leader. You have share. You have to just watch and wait and see what's going to happen. In normal, what we're seeing now with launches is that the station that goes on the attack and launches, it's not a full product. It's a music appliance for about the first 30 to 60 days.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just in a small playlist. So I think those stations that are the incumbent should stay local, make sure they're playing the right music. Again, that's part of the process of attacking yourself. But don't do any knee-jerk reaction. Just kind of assess the situation and see what the other guys might be doing well. And you may not know that for 4 to 6 months until they get a morning show, an afternoon show, and fully staffed. Because a lot of times, as I said, these stations go on the air, and there's like one or two full-time staffers there.
Yeah.
There's a PD, and there might be a live midday show, but in many cases, it's very bare bones. It's not a fully developed product, so just be careful at the beginning.
Now, I've interviewed about 70 different people, and I always have a tendency to go off on tangents. I'm going to do my best not, but you led me down about four roads there. But let me take it down my list of bullets, and then we'll break out a little bit. As far as branding goes, literally the next thing I had written was, people can often do knee-jerk reactional things, or sometimes they can do nothing. It sounds like you've already answered this next one again, but the doing nothing at first might be the better play. But they can also do things that are in between. I think a station, as you intimated, needs to really know how to evaluate themselves. They need to really know what product they have, make sure what they're doing is best. But what is the best way a station can evaluate themselves if and when a competitor appears in their market?
Are you talking about beforehand or right when they get there?
Really, before or right when they get there. But I think most importantly, right when they get there, you need to know what you are more than what they're going to be, if that makes sense.
I think that's part of the answer right there, is you in the attacking yourself and preparing yourself for the inevitability of another guy coming in the market. I think you have to know who you are. What are you famous for? What do you do well? What's your brand? What are the things that make you a strong part of the community? And then you have to just super serve those strengths and play to them.
And let me jump in and actually get specific. So how do you do that? How does a station truly look at themselves and figure out what their actual positives are, and also maybe more importantly, what their negatives are? Not just that you have to do it, but how do you do it?
Well, I mean, back in the good old days when people had research budgets, you could do that. you could do a project to attack yourself. Now you can do that with staying close to your listeners and asking them for honest feedback, whether it's in focus groups. And when and listeners that are coming into the station, you're bringing them into the station, and you're being very candid about it. We're just asking you, tell us about the radio station and things that you think that we can do better. I think if you do that on an ongoing basis, you'll have a pretty good feel for what your weaknesses are and how to attack them, and how to make sure that they don't become an ongoing problem that drives listeners to punch the button.
I was actually going to step into some real life examples, but let me ask you this one first. I want to get into some specifics, besides research, but what are some things that stations, PDs, OMs, owners, even on-air talent can or should do when a new competitor comes to town? In other words, you've kind of waited it out. You see that you have a strong local competitor coming at you. What are the best things you can do as a station to really make a change for the better, i.e. change your talent, change your imaging positions, change imaging voice even, that kind of thing. Can you get into specifics on some things stations should do? Or is that a terrible question with your pause?
No, it's not terrible. I'm thinking it through here because, the idea of changing imaging and changing the station voice. Again, I think you have to be really careful on the front end of somebody coming into the market. And maybe, I don't know that those are the, I could be wrong here. I mean, you got guys on the call here disagree with me. I just think it's dangerous to just make wholesale changes, whether it's talent or a voice talent. Or just the positioning and any imaging aspects of the station. I'm not saying you do nothing.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that you because you made a really good point earlier. If you've done your homework and you're doing self-evaluation and attacking yourself, you should know who you are, what we stand for, what we're good at, what we're famous for. And the other guys don't. They're brand new. The only thing they are up front is a 10,000 songs in a row music appliance. Now that can be really good. For example, the attack that's going on right now in Boston, Clear Channel is going up against KLB, and they're playing 10,000 songs in a row until they get fully staffed up. And as I understand it, I haven't gone on MediaBase lately, but I think on the front end, the playlist consisted of 110 songs. I listened to the station for like the first 2 hours, and I heard nothing but gigantic, huge hits, big, big songs. I think that's the right thing to do. If you're the guy that's the incumbent, I don't know, there's nothing you can do about that. You have a spot load, you have promotions, you have all those things that you have to do. In that situation, you just have to execute them. I do think every station at the onset of an attack can in a matter of 24 hours, can evaluate what kind of clutter is on the air. Because even if you attack yourself and look at yourself in the mirror every day as a radio station. You can always sort of take, you know, trim a little bit of fat off the steak and clean yourself up.
Yeah.
And I think that can happen quickly. And you can do that musically too if you choose to get tighter.
And a station like KLB could probably. I actually haven't tuned into them. I did. I think we're talking about the Bull that launched in Boston, but I didn't listen to them.
Yeah. Last.
But stations like that can actually use this as to their advantage. They can, like you just said, use this as a really good time to say, okay, maybe we were kind of chilling as the only country station, but it's time to really take a look at ourselves. And instead of making any massive moves, but they can really use this opportunity to trim the fat, so to speak.
I think there are some things you can do quickly to say, because I don't care how well rooted you are and great personalities and how loved they are and how well they test. I think you can always sit a personality down and say, look, man, we got to really, really tighten this thing up. You got to get in, you got to get out. We got to, as a team, whether it's on the imaging, we can tighten everything up and we can execute better and make this thing like a really fast moving product that just sounds really, really clean and efficient.
Now, let's go to Nashville, because I know you're familiar with the town. I am not, let's see here. I don't listen to a ton of the Nashville radio stations. I just don't have time in my life to be streaming outside the market stations all the time. But three stations, two companies, all three of which I think at least can be said are doing a good job. But, you know, they all have their own position. Well, instead of me yammering, why don't I just let you discuss the battle there, discuss what each station did to really make themselves individual in that massive country market with a lot of country players.
Yeah, I think you're right on, between Clear Channel and Cumulus. And I think it's happened in the last 2.5-3 years. I would actually say that the market, the three stations divided into their each unique position about the time Michael Bryan arrived. I think he did, because up until then...
Let everyone know who he is and where he is in case they're not familiar.
Oh, I'm sorry. Michael Bryan is the PD of WSIX. He's the OM for the cluster.
That's the Clear Channel station. Yeah, so that's
the Clear Channel station.
Yep.
Interestingly, when Michael got to the market, he came up from, I think, Jacksonville, and he's a top 40 guy, had never programmed country before. He comes to Nashville, and everyone assumes he's going to program the river and hire a new PD at SIX because John Anthony had left. He was programming at WSIX. Instead, what Michael does is he says, and I interviewed him at the time when I was the country air check, he says, I know how to program a top 40 station, but I think there's some things that I can do to ignite some energy and a point of differentiation in the country station. So he takes over WSIX. Up until then, there was, when I first got to the market in 2009, I really felt those three stations were kind of like one big country radio station. There wasn't much difference in the music. None of them were particularly aggressive musically. And I don't think that personality-wise they stood out. It was just sort of one benign kind of jumbled big radio station. But I think, as I said, in the last couple of years, that they have all kind of gone off into their own place. SIX is the most aggressive station musically, playing the most new music, and they do position it that way. KDF, WKDF, is sort of the middle ground. They do play new music, but I would say that, like, in terms of the safest, most consistent music product, they win that. Because when you listen to WKDF, you're listening to proven hit songs and the right kind of new music on the station. I'm not saying the SIX has it wrong. I'm just saying that they're more aggressive and they take more chances with music. And sometimes you take new chances with new unfamiliar music.
Well, they're number one 6+, so you're not necessarily saying anything negative. They're obviously doing something right.
Yeah, no, I think they had to do that. I think Michael understood that the station had to position itself and gap itself in terms of the sound, the sonic quality, and he did that. He did that on a lot of levels. He did it with music in terms of being more aggressive and positioning it more aggressive, but the imaging on the station, and Ryan, you would appreciate this, and anybody who is, you know, an imaging director listening or on the call would really appreciate what he did, because he separated the sound of the stations by a large degree. He brought in Jack Ingram. And Jack Ingram, and you live in Texas, Ryan, so you know Jack is a very popular Texas artist. And Jack has a great voice, and Jack is now has a second career as a voiceover talent for radio imaging.
We had him on KSCS for a couple of years. Yeah,
and it's different. It's a lot different than what you know the standard fare had been. So he did that. So he, you know, musically and sonically, the jingles are different. The jingles sound like some of them sound like country artists are doing them.
They look.
So I think he did a great job there.
Yeah. Okay. I'm continuing. I don't want to interrupt you. Sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay. And then, but then, actually, when Cumulus took over for Citadel, KDF kind of took that middle ground, and then WSM FM has a more an older feel to it, a much more conservative music posture. And imaging posture, it's very straight ahead. It's very middle of the road. It would be what a lot of us would consider like a heritage-sounding radio station. KDF is sort of the mainstream, and WSIX is a flame-throwing top 40 station that happens to play country music. And I think that's good for the market because it lets the listeners know that there's three distinct brands in the marketplace. And, Ryan, when you and I were talking a few weeks ago and
I was just getting
ready
this
for this
up.
Call, I was saying that I remember being at country radio seminar. It's as recent as about a year before Michael got here. So I want to say it's 3 or 4 years ago. There was actually a very interesting panel. It was a live focus group, and there were listeners in Nashville and there were listeners in Kansas City. And of course, in Kansas City, you have WDAF, which is an intercom station, and then you have two Wilkes properties, KBEQ and KFKF. And KFKF is that very heritage-sounding, old-school, kind of straight-down-the-middle imaging station. Then there's KBEQ, the aggressive, musically aggressive station, imaged very CHR, Mike Kennedy. I mean, his background, he's been in country for over 20 years, but his background is top 40. And then there was the Wolf. And those listeners in each town, you could tell that in Kansas City, those listeners could identify the different sonic and music qualities for each of those radio stations. And yet the ones in Nashville are like, well, I listened to this one. They're sort of similar. They couldn't tell you the difference. Well, the market in Nashville has come a really long way since then, as I just described. And I think part of that has to do with in the last year or so, I mean, it's gotten even more point of differentiation with the two morning shows in the market. Bobby Bones came into the market in February, March actually, of 2013, and then this year, or last year, I can't remember when it was, it's somewhere in the last year, Blair Garner with America's Morning Show on Cumulus. So, I mean, I think that's separated it even more. But I think that's important. I think that's good when there's more than one station, I think it's important. But when there's three stations, I think it's really critical that each of them carve out their own brand, their own identity, and their own things that they're famous for in the market.
I think that's good. You brought up Kansas City too. We didn't discuss that example the other day, but they're another great example of a strong three station market. Two things now that I immediately want to get into. A lot of people, and you've already done it once. A lot of people will tout local over syndication. They'll say, you know, local is strong. You know, it's just kind of the thing people say. I am actually kind of on the fence, and I'll just stay on the fence for right now. So you already mentioned the fact that local is going to be stronger, probably. Anyway, but in Nashville, we've got two major morning shows and probably really the only two shows you talk about in Nashville as far as country, and they're both national shows. Have you noticed in the market that A, they're perceived as national, B, does that matter, and C, how strong are they in town, and discuss how important that local angle may or may not be?
Yeah, well, you know, Bobby Bones is based in Nashville, and they don't make they don't try and hide at all the fact that they're on in a lot of different markets.
Right.
Bobby will take calls from people all over the country, and they'll talk about trips that they take, whether they fly to Austin or Madison or whatever. And Bobby is, you know, Bobby, there's no, he breaks down that third wall on the show. I think that's part of the appeal of the show and makes it interesting, because he just kind of wears his heart on his sleeve. And yeah, there's no trying to hide the fact that it's a national show. Blair doesn't talk about it that much. You know, that show is based here as well. The flagship of the show is actually Nash, New York.
Right.
That's where they first launched the show. And, you know, I Blair will not allude to the fact that it's a national show so much. To my ear, I think Blair, I've loved Blair. I worked with him for a year when I was at at After Midnight. And I just think he's one of the most gifted air personalities I've ever heard. It's probably one of the finest interviewers of artists I've ever listened to. The show is, I think if I had to, and I hope Blair, you know, would not hate me for saying this, I think of the two stations, or the two shows in town, I think that Bones is just the more interesting show, because there's a lot more moving parts on that show. He's got Amy, he's got Lunchbox, and Bobby brings in these interns and the board op and Ray, the audiovisual guy. There's just a lot going on. And because he is more of a drama queen, so to speak.
Yeah, wasn't he leaving radio for TV like a few months ago? What happened to that?
Yeah, that was in February, you know, the kind of a whole thing that played out.
It seemed really real, too.
Yeah, I mean...
I'm just being a jerk to Bobby, sorry.
the difference between Bobby and Blair is that Blair is like a very, and Blair is perfect on execution and preparation, and everything has a very tidy beginning, middle, and end. And there's a fine bow on it at the end, and boom, into a song or commercial, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Bobby is very unradio-like. I mean, he kind of stumbles down the stairs in and out of breaks, and that drives programmers like me crazy. But I think listeners relate to it, because we're in a world where, like, videos that go viral are just shot on somebody's iPhone. They're not perfect. They're not edited. They're fuzzy. The camera's shaking around, all that stuff. And I think Bobby's show really reflects that. And that's why, of course, it performs so well, 1834, and really drives the performance of the radio station for WSIX.
And so then, which is kind of, I guess I was leading a little, wouldn't that sort of market example indicate that possibly the whole we've got to be local to win angle is not really true? That you can just be good, and if you're a national show, people don't necessarily care?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you, Ryan. I'm sort of wavering on that as well, that idea that it has to be local. And I think for a long time, now I've been in the country format since 1980, so I guess I could be considered like a real old timer in that sense. And so I think that country.
Are you on your second pair of hips
really
yet?
No, not yet.
Okay.
Thank
okay.
God.
Okay.
But I think the format has philosophically rejected the idea that a national show could work. Now, back in the day, and I'm talking the 70s and late 60s, there were national. Not so much national, but regional kind of trucker overnight shows.
Yeah.
And those always work, but that's a totally different animal. In mornings and afternoons, it was always believed that it had to be live and local. And, you know, if it wasn't local, then you couldn't relate to the market. And I think somebody at Clear Channel was looking at that and saying, okay, we're going to debunk that theory. And, yeah, I'm on the fence with it too. I think if it's good, compelling radio, I don't know that it matters. I mean, Howard Stern and Rush Limbaugh and people like that disproved that theory a long time ago.
Well, it's kind of like you said, the whole iPhone videos become popular because of the content. People don't care that they're underproduced and the production values aren't there. I'm not saying Bobby Bones doesn't have production value. He has some, but they really just care about the content. And that's cool. Yeah, we've hit that topic for sure. Because we're running on time, and I have so much to get in here. The whole classic country element. So we've got these three station markets all over the place now, and we're probably going to see these stations leaning classic, but they're not going to be classic. So it's kind of like the SM, the SM-FM style. And we talked about the Nash Icons that's coming. So it seems like the more popular that country gets, the more of an option, a viable money-making in the better demo option, the whole lean to the classic side works for a competitive format. So if you're a station that's launching a competitor in a battle market, you can probably choose that more classic leaning format now, and it's not so out of the realm of possibilities, right?
Yeah, it may not be, because it's just that whole conversation of carving out your identity and your brand in the marketplace if there's a place for it. And I think we've seen clearly Cumulus believes that there is going to be a place for that. They have designated, they haven't announced who they are, but I think in their minds they know what stations are going to be the Nash icon stations. Maybe they're flankers of their own station. Maybe they're flanker to a competitor. But I think they've made up their mind that that's going to work and the format is ready to split. And I think they may be right, because if you look at the performance of 1834 listeners for country radio in the last 2-3 years, it's very, very strong. There are a lot of people that are long-term country programmers and people in this format who are concerned about the staying power, the longevity. Can the format maintain an 1834 strength in all these markets? There is a belief of some people that if country is country now evolving, where 1834 is the new 2554 target for the demo. And there's also concern that with an emphasis on 1834 and new music, do we risk running off or alienating a 35-54 listener, particularly 35-54 females, the 35-44 cell, which traditionally has been the engine that drives listening and usage for country radio? Do we risk driving those people away? Well, maybe with the arrival of Nash icons in some of those markets, that will help.
All right, so country's gone through these evolutions, I guess. These kind of this has been the small changes, the leans in music one way or the other, female heavy, then all the females disappear, group heavy, then it goes back solo. But how do we know as country programmers and positioners whether this whole 18 to 34 thing is going to actually stick, or if this is a fad and country's eventually going to go back and we're going to shoot ourselves in the foot by trying to overserve the youngsters, you know, when country does go back? Or in other words, how do we know if 1834 is here to stay and that's who we should serve and it'll be good for a long time?
I think that's the $64 million question, okay. Not $64,000 question. Because, you know, if you look at, there was a study this year that Edison presented, and they showed the growth in 1834 listening, and it's been going on for the last 10 years. Now, we think of the 1834 explosion in the last 2-3 years for the format, and true, it's really popped. I mean, the distance between, you know, 3 years ago and now, it's just been gigantic growth. But it was trending up. It's not something that just started happening. So, you know, there may be, the format may be growing a lot of loyalty in that age group, and they'll become long fans. That may be happening.
RJ, I hear you might be back.
Yep, I'm back.
All right. I think that's a little better. Talk about Buzzin' and that battle in Minneapolis-St. Paul. And Buzzin's definitely had success. Definitely had success. So why do you say that is?
Well, I you know what? I've said this before, and actually, I talked to a lot of people about that launch. I think it's the most successful, impressive launch, perhaps, of any radio station I've ever heard. I know there's been a lot over the years, but certainly for country in most recent years. One thing that helped Buzzin', if you remember, they changed from, I believe, an AC format, and they went all Christmas around Thanksgiving leading up to the change. And they built up a massive weekly cume on the radio station that by the time they switched formats on Christmas Day, they were cuming over 1 million people a week. So that's pretty amazing because, you know, like I said earlier, usually when a station changes formats, it's because the one before that wasn't working so well, so they sort of zero-base everything and they don't have listeners and there's not a cume momentum story. In this case, they made the flip when 1 million people a week were tuning in. And they took that momentum and they just run with it. I mean, they got in the game very, very quickly.
That's actually a really good point, although that doesn't always work. If I remember right, in New York City, 102.7 became that thing that Kiefer Sutherland was voicing. It was like this entertainment for women radio. And they did the same thing. They did their flip after Christmas, and the station lasted maybe not even a year. But so why would that be more of a, I guess what I'm saying is, why would that be more of an advantage to a country station versus other formats? Because I think it would.
Well, I think it's every market is unique, too. You have to remember that at the
sure.
time, I don't know that K102 had a double-digit share, but they were very, very strong. It's just a great radio station. You know, they've been there a long time. And they at that year leading up to that flip, if I recall correctly, they had several books where they were number one in the market with a 7, 8, 9 share, somewhere in that vicinity. So there was obviously a large appetite for country in the Minneapolis market. And I just think that, you know, in general, when you have that many, that big of a life group in a market, people like a choice. They like to have an alternative. And to Buzzin's credit, they have a great name, they have a very good signal, and they came in with a actually, you know, K102, Swedberg and J.D. Green, they love new music and they're aggressive with new music. What Buzzin came in right at the right time when this 1834 thing started really mm-hmm. popping, and they got even more aggressive with new music.
And what's their call letters?
KMNB.
Yeah, Buzzin's KMNB. Versus K-E-E-Y?
K-E-E-Y.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So this made me think of another. Let me go to a different scenario and find out why perhaps. Well, let me just talk Denver, because you got another just a monster heritage, you know, megastar, KYGO in Denver. The Wolf launched with what is a very successful brand nationwide. You know, in many markets, the Wolf is a really strong brand. They brought in a lot of local talent. They, you know, they did, it seemed to me on paper, like what you should do if you want to attack that heritage station that just decides, you know, because KYGO was kind of all over the map musically, and their talent was kind of all over the map, and their imaging was a little weird to me. Sometimes they were really fast and CHRE, and sometimes they sounded like 1983. And the Wolf has never really done anything of substantiation, and they've had a long time. So what are the lessons to learn from Denver?
Well, I think the biggest lesson is if you launch a station against a great competitor with a great brand like KYGO, you better have a good signal. And the Wolf is sitting on 92.3, I think. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, that signal has never been any good. And I can go back to I can go back 20 years ago. At 20 years ago, I was at KZLA programming it, and the company I worked for, Shamrock at the time, bought a station from Premier. Remember when Premier started trying to get into radio station ownership? They owned a station in Denver. They made it country. They called it Big Dog 92.3. And then Shamrock bought it from Premier. And then for like 3 months, I was programming both stations. And I went in there, and it was all about that signal. It's just not a very good signal. It doesn't cover the area very well.
Yeah, I sort of forgot about that. That's pretty key, actually. Pretty key piece of knowledge when you're going to attack. People should be able to hear you.
And I think we're going to have to see, I know we're running out of time here, but I think San Francisco, we're going to have to take a look at that, because from what I understand, you know, Cumulus has just launched Nash up there. I know the programming's going to be solid. They're going to do the right thing.
But the stick's weak, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a San Jose stick, but they're saying they're going to put it on a translator and it's going to be a Bay Area thing. I don't know. I don't know how that works. And I don't know, maybe someone on the call knows it. I don't know what the competitor, I don't know what the Cumulus station in the Detroit area, I don't know what their signal is like.
I'll get that from Terry here in a second. I got a few more minutes. I mean, we started late, so I'm going to take some more of your time, RJ. We're going to do
sure.
that. I wanted to take it back to the actual branding specifics. We talked some market examples and things that people can look at and some of the mistakes and some of the positives. But a lot of things that, a lot of times what'll happen is we launch the new station and then the old station immediately changes the slogan or starts to use words they never use, like variety or new music and these kinds of things. In the branding, give me a couple of examples of things that are just not worth it. And then maybe if you can, give us some examples of things that are worth it in regards to positioning and branding style, imaging style, that kind of thing.
Well, again, I think it's market specific, so I don't mean to be vague, but You know, I mean, I think stations should know what's important, what matters, and what doesn't. What
okay,
let me
get specific then, and we'll try this. I got a new station, and I'm going to come in as the, you know, new hot new country. I'm definitely going to position myself hot and new. You know, the slim rotation, ultra aggressive, and then you've got the heritage station. Would adapting, just suddenly calling yourself, you know, new country 95.5, when you haven't changed anything else about the station, does that really make an impact on the listener, or do they see right through it because your music has not changed and you played that sweeper that says new country in front of a Garth Brooks song from 1998?
Yeah, I think you have to walk the walk, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think you can just say, well, hey, we'll steal. I think back in the day in Diary and, you know, 20 years ago, yeah, you could do that. Okay, well, we'll just steal that position and we'll call ourselves so-and-so.
That's a good point. So, but we have a lot of Diary.
I don't think that works anymore. I think you have to do it. And when you do it, you have to image it. So, you know, if you're going to be more aggressive musically, you have to set it up. You have to make an appointment to have listeners listen for it, then you have to set it up, then you have to do it, then you have to tell them you did it, all that stuff. I think listeners do. I don't know that listeners really care anymore or listen that carefully to positioning statements. I think it's about what stations really do performance-wise and what they really do with their music mix.
And then finally, I wanted to bring up the literal attack. So, in fact, I was reading a Facebook thread the other day in one of the radio groups, and someone was getting attacked by the Crosstown station, you know, by name. I've always been, I guess, if I had to lean one way or the other, if you only gave me a yes or no, I would say no. I would say never waste your airtime ever mentioning your competitor ever, even if you're the little half a share new station that has nothing to lose. But that's me. Are there times where either station, the bigger or the smaller, should use the other competitor by name and directly attack them on the air by name?
You know, I'm like you. I've never been a big fan of that. Although I have to say that when I was in San Antonio and we decided, it was with Cox, we decided to go aggressive and trim our spot load down and do song counts and all that, and we were calling KJ out. I was at Y100. We were calling KJ out. As a programmer, I wasn't comfortable doing it, but I did see the results.
Yeah.
It still feels, you know, kind of icky to me to do that, you know? But there are, I think in certain situations, yeah, it works, although I personally am not a big, big fan of it.
Yeah, my example is in Dallas at KSCS, we also had the Twister. We had, you know, the extra country station that was ultra aggressive and new. They would call out the Wolf, you know, regularly, daily, if not once an hour, about how, you know, they play this many songs and we play 1,000 more a week or whatever. I think if you're going to do it, you've got to be the baby station. But again, it leaves a bad taste in my mouth. So it can be done, and it has been done to some success. But that's where I'll leave it with RJ, man. I think we did like 45 minutes with you, and I thank you so much. You're more than welcome to stay.
Yeah, I hope it was helpful. And
I'm curious
if anybody has any questions or comments, or if I've just made a complete ass out of myself.
No, I know you didn't do that, but if you are willing to stay, because I know we just hit the 504 mark, I am quote unquote broadcasting from the NBC Sports Radio studio, by the way. So I feel very cool in here. I'm very cool today, and then I'll go back to myself later and not be so cool. So let me see if anybody wants to chime in, and we'll just have to do it in an orderly fashion. If anybody has any questions for RJ, knowing his background and knowing that he has that sort of view from 30,000 feet up in the auspices of All Access in Nashville, go ahead and chime in.
Okay, I got one.
Yeah, go ahead.
I got Bobby Bones on in the morning. I'm voice track with two girls in the midday. I'm live in the afternoon. and I got a competitor that's 50 miles away that is consistently number one or number three, and we are consistently at six or seven. How important is being on the street in that opposing city?
That's a great question, actually. We didn't even hit that topic. RJ?
Yeah, I think that's always important. I think, you know, that the idea of, you know, Ryan, when you and I were talking, you said you were on the fence about the idea of positioning and being local And I'm with you on that about being on the fence, but I do think when you get down boots on the ground, street-level warfare, I think that you have an advantage being in the market. You can go to concerts, you can go to events, you can be in front of listeners and the people they hear on the air, they can meet them. You know,
now, let me chime in real quick because I actually don't know who asked that. I'm sorry, but you say
Charlie O.
Hey, yeah, what up? You have Bobby Bones on the morning show. I think you're sort of intimating there that you're like, maybe I'm a little handcuffed. And you're
exactly.
saying, I got
exactly.
my national morning show. Who am I supposed to put on the street? But
right. But
really, it's probably, RJ's going to concur, that it's always important to put as many asses in the seats or people on the streets as you possibly can, whether they be free events and maybe make it, you know, your midday talents. Like, look, we're paying you a paycheck to be here on the air. You're also going to do two events a week where you take a van down to that town and sit there on the corner and hand out stickers. Something
right.
like that.
Yeah, I think so. But I would ask the question, I mean, I don't know, forgive me for not knowing what market you're in with Bones there, but...
Tyler Longview.
Is your competitor doing anything to out-local you on the air that may put you at a disadvantage?
No, not really. I mean, they're pretty much all voice track during the day, all day long.
Does their morning show sound really local? Like, are they using city hits constantly? Like, hey man, I was hanging out over in whatever Tyler, whatever.
They got Big D and Bubba.
Oh, man. All right. So you're not even... So that's like... I mean, honestly, for me, for my money, I'd take Bobby Bones, but...
Yeah. I'm with you. I love those guys. Big D and Bubba work hard, but I just think in terms of, you know, the quality of show, I think Bobby has them beat. The other thing I would think of, and you probably have a better connection to the Bones thing in terms of localizing, is there a way... Now, I understand that Bobby... Mike Ferris at WMAD, who was very, very concerned on the front end of having Bone, and Mike has since left WMAD, by the way, but on the front end was very concerned about Bones, but he said that one thing that he was very impressed with about Bobby was his willingness and his diligence in working really, really hard to deliver affiliate stations whatever customized liners, promos, whatever they needed, and that would help them give an advantage and maybe try and approach localizing his show.
Have you gone that route?
That very well. Very well.
And do you think you utilize him well
on
the air?
I've heard that, and I think that's so important.
Do you utilize him well on the air, do you think?
That's what our station, you know,
awesome.
Generates from the start of Bobby Bones. He continues throughout the day.
Okay, awesome. So you do recycle. You recycle Bones listeners throughout the day. You try and keep, you know, his people or, you know, other day parts coming back to him and using his content later.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that's a great strategy myself. I think that's any station that has an investment in a good morning show needs to make that clear in all day parts, I think.
Right.
Sorry, go ahead.
Brian.
Yeah.
It's Terry. Can I throw out a possible idea for the street battle?
Yes, absolutely. This is Terry Phillips, Detroit City, WYCD.
I worked at the dawn of my career at a wonderful station in El Dorado, Arkansas, Market Unrated Nothingness.
Yes.
And our facility was 50 miles out of the town we were serving, and I was literally the only jock that was in town, and we were using a very... at the time, kind of cutting edge, but really wonker-jawed way of getting me to Camden, Arkansas, and then back. So I literally was the only person in the building. What we did, though, because we had local sales, is we made sure every salesperson had a T-shirt, and we rotated through the salespeople where they had to take their sales calls by driving the van around.
Yeah, yeah.
That's great. We got this huge 28-foot RV as our station vehicle.
Oh, that's a little more difficult to drive around, isn't it?
Oh, come on. They can do it. That's cool. Thanks, Terry. Anybody else have any other questions for RJ? Anything? Anything battle-wise, competitive-wise, anything? Branding?
I got one more.
Yeah, go ahead. Nobody else jumped in.
The bro country effect – you say that we need to stick with the 18 to 34s. We need to just ride this out.
I don't know.
Well,
yeah.
I don't know that I said that. I think that we don't know a lot about how sustainable it is. I think that the bro country, I have said this and I've written it, I believe the bro country thing that we're seeing right now will gradually subside, and it'll make way for something else. I think that, but I do know from talking with programmers that programmers are a little, or not a little, they're a lot tired of it, and the industry is a little tired of it, and I think that that topic has been think-pieced to death in the press. And you know, things like that. But I do know from a lot of programmers who are also sick of it, they're telling me that the listeners are just fine with it. Just keep bringing it on. Just keep drinking it up.
And
but I think that it'll be an organic, natural order of things that will subside, because if we're careful, if the format takes care of itself and manages itself correctly as it has in years past, we'll be very, very wary of knockoff of a knockoff of a knockoff.
Yeah,
that's what really hurt the format in the mid '90s. There were all these guys wearing brush, you know, these you know, creased Wranglers and brush popper shirts and white Stetson hats, and there was just one after another. And after, you know, we got to get another Garth, and we got to get another Clay Walker, then we got to get another
George.
This guy or that guy, and then after a while, it's all watered down, and everybody's just a big phony.
And that's when we got boy band country, right?
Well, yeah, I mean that, but it made way and eventually the audience just rejected that proposition. And we do have a lot of that sound right now, that bro country thing. But I think it's gonna, I really think it's gonna slow down, and we're gonna get some other I will tell you this: I have heard two or three songs off the new Florida Georgia Line album. Okay, they're gonna come with a new single on July 14th. And that song is not a bro country theme song. That is a strong evolution of their sound and where they're going to be as artists. And they want to be in this format for a long time. They don't want to just keep doing the same thing over and over and over. So I think they're very conscious of it.
Cool. Excellent. Anybody else have any other questions for RJ? I don't want to keep him too long, but I do want to abuse him as much as we can.
Please do.
I got a real quick one. It's Brian Kelly up at WKKY.
What's up, Brian?
Hey, real quick, you know, we're finding in our area, we're competing up against WGAR out of Cleveland. We're competing out of the Bull out of Ashtabula, Ohio. But we're finding that where we play during the daytime, we play a lot of the newer music, the brand new music out, but we mix in a lot of the old stuff. We could go from Florida Georgia Line to, you know, Loretta Lynn. I mean, we play a lot of the favorites of the old stuff. We don't play the old stuff that never got played, you know what I mean? But
yeah. We're
finding that's a good mix. Is there not when I listen to everybody talk, they're like, oh, you got to either be old or you got to be new. You can't be the mix.
Yeah.
But, you know, talking to people out on the street, they don't like the new music. Some of the older people don't like the new music. The young people don't like the old. So we sort of mixed it, and it seems to be working.
How are you doing up there? How are your numbers, or how are you doing?
Well, we look at our numbers in a three-county area, which is right outside of Cleveland. But we actually beat GAR in their market this year, which is weird.
Yeah. So you're doing really well with it. So obviously, you're almost like a jack of country, and that format sort of works, right, RJ? That we've seen that other places.
Yeah, I think you know, somebody once told me a long time ago that great radio is whatever works. And if that's working for you, then, man, I'd keep doing it, because you're right. A lot of these 35, 54 listeners that have been listening to country music for a long, long time, and usually if somebody's listening to country music when they're 50 years old, they've been, you know, they didn't just find it last week. You know, they've been in the format a long time. And some of this stuff is just moving way too fast for them. I mean, there are some, sonically, and as a production guy, Ryan, I'm sure that you recognize this too. Sonically, there are some things happening in our format right now that are just like, they were unheard of, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
You don't even have to listen. You can just listen to the drums. All you have to listen to is the drums. And these drums are being made on a complete, you know, Native Instruments complete system, and not by a real drummer, you know, half of them, I should say. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah, so sonically, it's too fast for them. Thematically, it's too young for them. They can't relate to, you know, Daisy Dukes and sitting on a tailgate and,
you know, drinking a beer at a bonfire in a field. I just don't know. I mean, that's not where they're at. Now, that is where the younger listeners are. They're all about that. So we do run it. We have to be really careful that we don't, you know, create that dividing line. But again, as we talked about with the Nash icons, that may be helpful to those listeners so that, you know, we keep that kind of family reunion environment in the format. But man, I think if that's working for you, and I got to tell you something, that would be a very, do you guys stream? I want to check that out because I think that would be a very interesting mix to hear a Loretta Lynn or something of that ilk next to something new. That can work, and Ryan would probably be the first one who could tell you how to image that and create those that mortar between the two bricks.
They do. They do just fine. Palatable. Yeah, they do real good there. You're streaming,
we stream,
right?
And, yeah. We, you know, like I said, it a lot of it just come from, like, with my show. I'll be honest with you. I was really a novice coming into this, and I'll be honest with you. Chris Stevens was TM Studios, now Westwood One, whatever. He really has helped me quite a bit. But I'm just saying that, you know, just talking to the listeners is what took us up a little bit, because I went to our our sales guys and their managers, and I'm like, listen, these guys are saying they hate this new country, and we're going off a playlist that they just absolutely hate. We're going to lose numbers. And after they went to a couple remotes with us when I was talking to these people, it sort of clicked in their head, you know?
Yeah, that's great. That's a cool story. WKKY, RJ, check them out.
Yeah, I'm writing that down. I've got to listen to you guys. I'm sure, hey, man, if that's working for you, congratulations.
I love it. I love doing a service like this because there's just literally every kind of station, every kind of country station, you know, and I check out all of our stations and some of their competitors too. And I think all of ours are better, of course. But anyway, before RJ goes, any with last questions for RJ? Anyone else? It's possible we covered everything. Possible. All right. RJ.
Close.
You're the man. Thank you so much. And I'm going to talk to Terry real quick about the Detroit situation, and then we'll field any other general questions. You're more than welcome to hang on, but if you got to go, I understand. I just want to say thank you so much, RJ.
I'd like to talk about Detroit. I'd like to hear the Detroit conversation.
Awesome. So we got we got Texas Terry Phillips, who, of course, is famous for his work in Detroit. Terry, you're still here, right?
I'm famous.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm still here.
He's famous. I love Terry. You can talk radio. You can start anywhere. And then the conversation will just go everywhere. We just always, and then, you know, he knows his tech. He knows his computers, you know, non-audio related tech. Anyway, Detroit is in an interesting situation because finally there's another country competitor for the mighty WYCD. And it's been a few months now. And I remember talking to you the day it launched. And you guys were kind of like, you know, we'll wait and see. I think we got a good product. We'll wait and see. So you've waited and seen. What are your thoughts on what is happening there in Detroit with your competition?
Well, we were done an incredible service. We were given a kiss when Clear Channel came up against us. We haven't been the only country station for very long.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true.
Clear Channel signed on to Fox. They had a full live air staff, ran an incredible amount of TV, put billboards all over town. Showed up at our downtown hoedown with billboard trucks and tried to break in with their shirts. They came at us hard and were throwing money at the wind. They never got a real foothold against us. And I think that was, as was mentioned before, is, you know, attack yourself, attack yourself. We've never viewed ourselves as a station without competition because Detroit is a non-traditional country market. And I don't care what anyone says, blowing sunshine, Detroit is a non-traditional country market. So our competition is every station on the air. You know, we have to fight with the ACs for the 2554 female. We have to fight with the CHRs. So anyways, we cleaned our act up a lot from what problems we had. We really tore ourselves apart and built it into what it was. Pre-Nash, and Nash actually signed on, I think it was the end of November, and they went all country Christmas, and it was really odd. You know, so there have been stations that that's worked for, and gosh, I want to say Kansas City, but I'm not sure, where they spiraled a Christmas country switch into a higher share afterwards. But it didn't catch here. And as they put on their morning show and nights and now have hired live jocks, you never take your competition for granted. You're always ready for a fight, but I'm pretty sure we've got this. I would call it at round one.
Yeah.
You have
one of the well-known PDs there, Tim Roberts. I really respect him. I think he's not the kind of guy that ever made any knee-jerk reactions or did anything wrong up there. But without giving us, like, you know, inside the room strategy, what were some of his thoughts on what would happen to the station? Has he made any, you know, claims that you guys would need to do anything drastic or anything big or change anything? Or what are some of the PD's thinkings there?
Well, Tim was one of the architects behind Buzzin. Most people don't know that, but he was one of the main people who helped sign on that station. He provided a lot of strategy and spent a lot of time up there, a lot of flights back and forth. He's a very, very smart guy. He's a very good programmer. And from my seat, he's the best boss you could ever have because, you know, he lets me do what I do. And we have conversations about strategy of the station, you know, rather than mandates.
Yeah.
He's a real thinker. And he and I are of the same mind of that. I don't want to get into all the things that I think Nash is doing wrong because I don't want to tell them how to fix themselves. But I think they're doing a lot of things wrong, and I think they're very defeatable.
Okay, let me
in any market.
Let me bring you to this realm because we talked about it a little bit, and everybody, it's always on their mind, especially talent, because they're always going to say, "Well, no, local's better." You know, I'm the local afternoon jock. I'm better than the national syndicated crap you could bring in. But YCD remains an extremely local station. And Nash, yeah, of course, as you've already mentioned and we've already talked about, has lots of national shows. What are your thoughts? Why, I assume your answer is local. Why is local better than syndicated, or at least in Detroit, why is it better?
I don't necessarily think local is always better, but I think a show that isn't as good local can beat a better national show.
Why?
I think the local show is the house in that betting scenario. That the house can always win. It has to do with focusing on what your strengths are and what you do right, and managing what you're not good at. If they're going to come at you with better imaging, you know, you get a service to clean things up. If they're going to come at you with super tight syndicated talent, you know, tighten up the jocks. Every jock can be tightened up. Every jock can get a refresher in the course of, if you're not more interesting than the song, stop talking. Now, sometimes you are more interesting than the song, and for the love of God, keep talking, because no one can syndicate that kind of material.
Yeah.
But you want to talk about a kiss from the gods is when you have someone, you know, especially here in the Midwest, in Detroit. Detroit is a town where people are born, live, and die. There's not a whole lot of people who move to Detroit, and there's not a whole lot of people who travel the world from Detroit. It's very sedentary as far as the population. So when you play a caller with a giant, thick Southern accent,
yeah,
you are a giant red flaming thumb, you know, bordering on sticking it up someone else's bottom. It's really uncomfortable.
And Detroit is one of those markets extremely prideful, right? I mean, a lot of people are prideful, but Detroit.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, I don't know what you have to be prideful about. Just kidding. But you are a very prideful people. So hearing a Southern accent is not going to be good.
It's not like people hate Southerners here. There's nothing like that. It just
yeah.
It sounds odd. it doesn't fit. And you pair that with local talent to mispronounce country artists' names, let alone names of streets. And, you know, it's like, you know, come on.
So, I liked hearing the story there, because it's an interesting dichotomy, just like the Detroit versus Minneapolis St. Paul, for example. But you guys didn't do a ton. I mean, you stayed YCD, but were there anything you did or any takeaways as to some real, strategies that people could employ that you employed up there?
Yeah, it's been said before, don't knee-jerk. For the love of God, don't knee-jerk. Don't mention that the other station exists on the air. And when you're dealing with listeners, be modest. One of the things that we did is a lesson we learned in the battle with Fox is don't give them an inch. One of the lines that we use in contests regularly is the free ticket station. We give away a lot of concert tickets. They started saying the free concert station, and it's like, wait, you got to be kidding me. We do free concerts all the time. So, you know, yeah, we're going to start mentioning that. We're not going to let them own that territory in the mind.
Yeah.
And it's not saying 50 million things. You know, you got to use some intelligence in you know, what you're saying on the air. You know, but if someone signs on New Country, you know, you'd be a fool not to occasionally say New Country when you're playing New Country.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
If you're having free concerts and they're saying they're the free concert station, for the love of God, point out that you're doing a free concert. You know, focus on your strengths. Figure out what you are good at, what you're great at, and try to make those better. Your weaknesses, manage them. You're never going to be perfect. But if you know you have a weakness, you know, find a way to manage it. That I think, is the most obvious and simple thing in the planet, but the scariest to do, to have the confidence to say, we're good at this. We're good at this. We can get better. This we're not good at. We've got to figure a way to manage this. You're not going to become great at something you're awful at. You know,
yeah.
Our morning show, our afternoon show is what they are. There are things that are great about them, but there are things that they're not good at. We're not going to suddenly make them brilliant at having short breaks if that's not what they do, or long comedy bits if that's not what they do. But if you can shine up what you are good at and double down at that and manage what you're not good at, you know, you can build a wall that's pretty impenetrable.
All right. Right on, man. Terry Phillips, WYCD. I think we've reached the finality here, but I did want to leave any other chance for questions. I don't know. RJ might have bailed. Are you still there, RJ?
Here.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. Well, I just want to thank you one more time.
Well, thank you, guys. I would just add to what to the Detroit situation and YCD, and I don't want to go too long here, but that station, Terry, if I'm not mistaken, you guys still do a St. Jude Radiothon every year?
Yes, we do.
Okay, so there's two major things that WYCD does that root it to the community. One is St. Jude. Now, that's not a local effort. It's for St. Jude Children's Hospital in Memphis, but it's such a gigantic, amazing event. They raise a lot of money, and it creates this feel-good, goodwill halo for the rest of the year. The other thing that can never be discounted is the Hoedown. That's a gigantic show. It's a signature event. YCD books amazing artists. They execute it well. It's the show of the year in Detroit. And I know that the shows come in, Luke Bryan and Keith Urban, all those guys. The Hoedown is the show of the year because it has WYCD's fingerprints all over it. And those two things, you know, are very, very big factors in YCD owning the position in that market. And I think we didn't talk about too much event marketing on the call, Ryan, but I think those are other factors that incumbent radio stations have to their advantage,
mm-hmm.
versus the upstarts who have a really tough time, because those events take a long time to build equity in. And when you have those are great weapons, and I'll just leave you with that.
Absolutely. Right on. Well, yeah, we could probably go on forever, so I will put a bow on it, but thank you for that capper, RJ. Terry, thank you, my man. Anybody else have anything they want to bring up? I did want to leave a little time. If there's any other questions, I know I heard some people bailing off the call because, I mean, it's already 5:30. You know, people gets to get home and get their beer. But if there's anyone left and you have any questions, speak now. Everybody good? Okay. Terry, thank you, my man. Everybody else, thank you for joining us. I will put this out in a podcast, my podcast. Some people subscribe to that, and that's great. But I'll make the audio free and clear available on the 360 site, TM Studios site. We'll make social links out there. I'll have Terry drive around in a car with a bullhorn regurgitating the show around America. So we'll do all the things we have to do. Everybody have a good one, and I'm going to hang up now. Bye.